rationale why legislation has to be amended. It was not to say it's only outdated, but to understand the rationale behind. So if we look into the whole process, we had to also subject the bill to the final impact assessment that says to understand what is the rationale for us to actually amend the legislation, and to also go deeper into understanding the problems and, you know, what different groups of society are actually affected by the problem. So the exercise actually highlighted key problems and the root causes. And the whole theory of change is to say if you address the root causes, then the problem will go away. So for example, if you go to a doctor and you have a certain condition, maybe the doctor will say, no, let's do further tests, maybe take blood samples. So the whole issue is that once we get to know, you know, the causes of that condition and we treat that, and the condition will go away. So the main problem that was identified was children and consumers are potentially exposed to harmful and illegal on or offline content, for example, all distribution platforms, networks and services. And remember previously the limitation of the board was around DVDs and videos and the like, and you know, the rapid technology came in with the online issues. And if you look also in terms of the rationale, is that once, you know, children are exposed to, you know, such content, it also affects them psychologically and the like. And considering also the challenges that we have as a country, a violent society, you know, high levels of sexual crime related rape and other issues comes into place. So we're able to identify certain root causes with the intention to say, will the bill be sufficient to actually address all those issues? So for example, root causes, premature exposure to harmful content, lack of policy and regulatory certainty. So those are some of the things that are contributing to the problem that we have identified. Other issues as root causes, the ineffectiveness, implementation of the mandate, you know, the coverage of the current legislation was not able to actually deal with the challenges that came, you know, during implementation. So for example, the board, you know, made use of compliance monitors, but they realized along the way that the behavior is not changing in terms of complying with the legislation. And they realized also institutionally that probably because we lack enforcement, you know, it's because, you know, we are having high levels of non-compliance. And the other issues were around the definitions of child pornography and also issues with your sexual offences and related matters, to say we don't want a situation where, you know, such offences happen, maybe victims are, you know, are taken from one place to the other, there are no clarity in terms of legislation, and creating a lot of uncertainty and, you know, a confidence in the public to say, you know, the justice system is not actually adequately addressing the problem. So the issue is also to say, where is actually this, if we solve those identified problems, what which groups of the society will actually benefit? So for example, children, adult consumers will also benefit from the implementation of the legislation, our online distributors of films and games, law enforcement in terms of, you know, having clarity, the alignment of legislation, the public, our NGOs, even for the department as well, in terms of a better implementation and enforcement of the legislation, as well as the board in terms of institutional arrangements and the commercial online content distributors. So those are the set of groups that were initially affected by the problem, and the amendments suggesting that if we improve, we amend the challenges that these groups were facing because of the current legislation will benefit. But the intention also of the question of who's benefiting is to say also in a highly unequal society with high levels of poverty, where is actually the biasness of our legislation and the policy proposal? And also it says for this legislation to happen, we need to also know the groups that are actually going to be affected around the implementation of the legislation, to say which groups are going to be key, you know, to take forth the implementation. So the department and the board has been identified as the main cost bearers, but also the distributors will also have to play a role in terms of the implementation of the legislation. All right, and then the other question was around the consultation of the legislation itself. We really also like to commend the department for the extensive consultation with different groups, and it was not only biased to stakeholders who are actually supporting the legislation. So there were main issues that also emerged around the consultation, for example, issues of alignment with other legislation which were raised by departments as well as other institutions, and to say with certain set of definitions, with certain, you know, introductions, be mindful of other existing legislation and also those that are emerging. As I indicated, one of the pastel issues that influence the change of our policies and legislation is also legal. So if you look at the current developments, we having the legislation that is coming, which is around the cybercrime and cybersecurity, the hate crimes, hate speech bills that are actually complementing the work and therefore require a kind of synergy and working together so that, you know, there is no red tape or, you know, delays in terms of implementation. And also clarity around definitions so that you can have an effective mechanisms of, you know, prosecutions and, you know, ensuring that there is a fair justice in the whole process. So, and other issues that came around consultations was even, you know, other definitions, how do we separate the commercial and non-commercial online distributors for classification, so that you don't have different decisions and different interpretations by certain groups, because those kind of issues can create even a tension in the society where other groups feel that maybe the legislation favors them over above other groups. And then also you have a group that also complains about, you know, high tariffs, and the questions also to department to say if we increase the tariffs, how does that get translated to an ordinary consumer? So those are some of the things that CSU actually raised in the whole process. And also to say one of the benefits that came through or seen also to say it actually, you know, the process gave a greater clarity, awareness and improvement to the bill as consultation were happening. But it also assisted the department to also anticipate certain disputes that can come, you know, from different groups. Because also if you introduce a rule, you are bound to have, you know, oppositions, you are bound to have support of the legislation. So for example, some of the faith-based organizations were more supporting harsher penalties, you know, for its implementation. So you'll always have, you know, groups that will support or groups that will actually oppose, but it helps institutions to actually be ready to deal with such disputes, of which some can come in the form of litigations or trying to halt the implementation of the bill itself. And then with regard to the section that deals with impact assessment, the intention of the question was to say it's not about completing the bill, having it assented to by the president, but start to think about the implementation. So the whole exercise exposed that there will be a lot of funding that is required for implementation. So the reason for impact assessment was to say also what is the value for money around, you know, the investment that goes with the implementation of the bill. For somebody can just look at the amounts that are included and start to say this is a costly legislation. But if you indicate alongside the investment or the cost around that implementation to say why do we want to spend so much, it's because we want to achieve ABC of the legislation. But it also highlights to say if you don't anticipate the cost, it will be a very good legislation that gather dust because you never thought through the cost. But it also says to us we have competing priorities. We have challenges of poverty and inequalities. Is it worthwhile to invest in such costs? But the other issue is to say it is more costly actually to reverse the harm that comes with, you know, this illegal content. And psychologically, it can, and you know, the future contribution of our children in the society, the high levels of violence. So it's so costly in terms of the whole justice system, correctional services, and, you know, the psychological harm to our society. But it also says the justification of the cost says to us as communications, as the board, to say how do we best minimize the cost without compromising the benefits that comes with our legislation. So one of the key issues that comes in is to say we start to, you know, actually spot different initiatives that are done by departments. To say, for example, basic education has interfaced with most of the children, and they are also introducing, you know, IT as part of their curriculum. We have Department of Telecommunications and Postal Services. They are actually improving the universal access and dealing with issues of e-literacy. How do we best, you know, consolidate all those initiatives, you know, so that we are able to cover, educate our communities, you know, within the existing resources. And also, it says to also have we actually consulted enough with those existing groups so that, you know, they are able to prioritize in their planning, they are able to allocate resources and complement the implementation of this bill. Then the other issue that CS is asking is it to say when we introduce this bill, is it going to be a regulatory burden? Is it coming with high compliance and implementation costs? And also, you know, what ways do we have that will attract compliance? Remember, other groups will have a problem of compliance because it's very complex, it's very demanding, and they found that actually the easier way is to do things illegally. So what is interesting about the bill is that it also brings some efficiency and streamlining in terms of also, for example, improving the turnaround times for classification decisions, you know. So those are some of the efficiencies that are coming with the bill, but also the alignment issues with other sectors and legislation. It's creating that streamlining process that will be easy in terms of, you know, legal certainty and as well as compliance. And the other issue, the reality is that when we when it comes to managing risk, which is one of the questions that comes with the CS to say, what are the potential risks that can affect the implementation of your legislation? The reality is that when you introduce a rule, you are bound to have risks, and it says plan properly, proactively so, so that you don't have unintended consequences that overtakes, you know, the good purpose of your legislation. So, but it also says once you are able to identify certain risks against your legislation, come with proactive ways of addressing them. So the CS process facilitated and the department acknowledged that, you know, there are certain potential risks. And this kind of honest contribution was to say the department was not, you know, only biased to the legislation and say everything will happen as planned. They were very honest to say, yes, we are introducing change, and therefore there can be certain risks, especially around IT-related issues of downtime. There can be issues around poor public participation, especially creating awareness, working together around development of guidelines with affected stakeholders. We can have challenges around fragmentation, between ourselves as government and other institutions. We can also face potential litigations. We can have a challenge of resources for implementation. And there was a particular position the department and the board came up with to say, for us to move, we are dealing with, you know, IT gurus on issues of online content. We need to have a very secured, sophisticated IT system. So it's not only about the IT system, but it's already pointing to say we also need highly skilled IT personnel to be able to manage the system. We need also effective stakeholder engagement plan, and also the emphasis around the establishment of interministerial committee that will do joint planning, joint resource allocation for the implementation of, and also, you know, any challenges that can come around issues of legislation and the like. And also upfront to say how strong is our legal team, how are we going to deal with any disputes or litigations? Because currently the state is losing a lot in terms of litigation, so how do we ensure that, you know, there is that kind of seamless implementation and issues around resource allocations and alignment of programs? Then the other aspect in the template itself is asking about the monitoring and evaluation to say how are we going to know that as we implement the legislation, the problem that we initially spoke about is actually being addressed. The problem of children and consumers being exposed to harmful and illegal. How are we going to gauge that since we introduced this legislation, we are starting to see, you know, a reduction in the exposure? And if it's not happening, we need to quickly identify ways or interventions of dealing with that. So it shouldn't take us, you know, a long term, 10 years to realize that there has been a problem with the implementation of the legislation. We should be able to quickly identify the bottlenecks and deal with it. We don't want a situation where we say we have good policies, we have good legislation, but implementation is the problem. But you find that the challenge is that when we are crafting the legislation, we didn't think through the monitoring aspect, the evaluation aspect of it. But it also says implementation or monitoring can also be used through our intergovernmental relations forums, like we can use the interministerial committee to assist with the monitoring of the implementation of the, because it cut across different sectors. And to also say, you know, we'll expect, for example, the NPA subs to be able to provide us with statistics to say, are we having a reduction in you know, the sexual offences that are related to non-compliance of this legislation. Frequent audits that will be taken by the board. So those are different instruments that will assist us to be able to gauge whether the implementation of this bill is able to address the identified problem. So at the end of the day, we'll have a system that will enable us to engage and say this was a very good legislation to address the identified problems. But the other issue is to say, when we invest around the implementation of this legislation, how does it actually translate into the bigger picture of the country? So you have main priorities that are summarized into social cohesion, into security, into economic growth, economic inclusion. How is this legislation contributing to that? So, for example, in terms of social cohesion, it's also contributing in terms of nation building, in terms of reducing harmful effects of violent and explicit content. So it plays a major role also into social cohesion and also security in terms of creating a secured environment for our children, financial security in a way that we are going to streamline our processes, have a joint planning, alignment of resources, regulatory certainty in terms of attracting investment and reducing the cost of compliance, economic inclusion. One of the issues was protection of online distributors in terms of issues of piracy. So those are the contributions in different elements of the national priorities. So that's basically the summary of the CS report that we did with the Department of Communications. But also in conclusion, one can say the bill requires commitment from a range of stakeholders, which is government, communities, and private sector, and therefore requires a very strong coordination mechanism from the department. The process also exposed associated costs, and to say within the context of a constrained financial environment of our country, how do we actually explore ways of reducing costs without compromising the benefits, such as better collaboration and considering the implementation in a very phased manner, and how do we best reprioritize in a way that we have a seamless implementation of the legislation. So those are some of the comments that are coming from our side. Thank you very much, Chair.
The DPE DPME and the department were working together on this issue as we agreed. But before that presentation of the department, we'll have to check if members do want to get some clarities on what the PME was raising. Honorable Van Dam.
Chairperson, I'm very confused.
Yes.
I thought we were having a presentation from DPME about the CS and the findings from the CS. What we've had now is basically a presentation in support of the bill and no actual information provided about what the outcome of the CS was. I thought we'd have the report of the CS in front of us, would engage with that. All we've had is basically a presentation in support of the bill and no actual critical analysis from the CS. So I'm very confused about what's happening. I don't feel like I've been given information about the CS.
Okay. But you accept that we told them that together with the department
must
come up with something that tells us that they've interrogated everything, but also the DPME will have to say this is what we got out of the exercise.
So yes, I fully appreciate that. That's why I wanted to hear from DPME themselves and see DPME's report. This is just what the FPB has presented before, saying this is why we need the bill. I don't see what DPME's opinion is, how they've conducted their assessment and what the findings of their assessment is. not what FPB thinks. But it's great that they needed to work together for that assessment. But I want to hear from DPME. I want to see that report.
All right, Honorable Kalako.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, I think the problem might be that the DPME included its report on together with the department. Because in as far as department is concerned, we will be interested in those areas which we said they must look at them together with the parliamentary those issues raised by the parliamentary state law advisors. I think the confusion might be here. Well, I agree to make a distinction between the report of the Department of Monitoring and Evaluation and the department's presentation. The lines are blurred when it is presented like this. For example, just to make an example, about another committee, trade and industry, you presented we were asked to do the same thing, but there was a complete distinct report on the assessment and the evaluation of the impact of the issue, although it was different. I think that the confusion might be there, although I would understand their angle. That is why it's going to be seen as if it's just agreeing. Whereas if we had that report on its own, saying these are the issues, this is on social impact, economically, in as far as all those issues, it might have been clear.
Okay.
No, Honorable Chairperson, thank you very much. I agree with Honorable Van Damme. I'm sure the DPME can easily just get through their documentation and just take us through, because what made us to bring them in is because we're not quite convinced with what the JOC was saying. On the other avenues, when we interrogated the bill, there were gaps. So we said they must also do work with yourselves. So give us the kind of work that we have done without supporting or criticizing. Just the work that we have done as DPME.
Then,
sir, I'm sorry about
that. No, it's okay. DPME, do you want to respond on that?
Okay. Thank you, Chair. I must indicate that there were two roles that we did as DPME. We were facilitating, assisting the department to apply the CF. And on the other side, we are doing independent analysis. So what was we presenting here was more of a finished product, because there were certain areas that will, you know, send back to department to say you can't do ABC, or you haven't like clarified, you know, the actual cost. We're giving you time, go back, and you know. So we didn't want to come only with the analysis, and yet there were no improvements from the department, which creates further delay. So it's been a process where we will raise an issue and allow the department to go and correct, and they will come back. So it's been a very to and fro kind of exercise until sort of an agreement was reached. And one of the issues that we raised, it was more learning from other legislation to say, yes, we want to, for example, establish an interministerial, but if it's not captured in the legislation, it can be problematic, because learning from, for example, the cybercrime, it's very clear in terms of the institutional arrangement of various departments that forms a cybercrime committee, to say this will be your roles, your responsibilities, this is how you'll function. But if it's not there in the legislation, you will still, you know, struggle to chase around other departments to work together with you. So this is one of the risks that we raised, and that we said it will be, you know, be great as part of best practice to be included in the legislation where you clarify the clear, you know, roles and responsibilities and how, you know, the IMC will function, and it will actually even, you know, enforce kind of implementation, planning, and resource allocation by different sector departments. Thank you.
Members, I'm not sure what you want us to do. My sense is that as TPME was presenting, unless my problem is our instruction. I thought as they were presenting, they were saying, here is the issue that we discussed, and here is the response. Not necessarily deviating from what we said must do. And then it will seem like a finished product, because they addressed the issues, both of them, the TPM and the department. I don't know, members, whether you want them to present their own assessment. It will be further delay, but it's fine. We can get to that. You say, as TPME, this is what we have come up with as a critique of the department's view. Remember, there is a parliamentary legal that will come in as well, because all these groups were working together so that we have the product that we have when we're discussing. We pointed areas that are problematic. So I don't know whether you want us to do that, go back and say, TPME, what did you find out? I'll come to you, Minister. No, you can start.
Thanks, Chair. I don't think there was anything unclear about our instruction. We're very clear about what we requested.
Yes.
We requested DPME to conduct an impact assessment from which we, as members of Parliament, were then going to form an opinion about a bill which was very controversial and all sorts of people had problems with. DPME hasn't done that. I think what we need is a report from DPME, an impact assessment report. I wish Honorable Gungubele was here, because he's good at explaining process. Identify. Yes, he'd explain it for me. X is the problem. This is the research we've done. And here's the answer. They have not done that. What they've done is it seems to me, they've just worked with the FPB and presented to us what they think is a good idea, but they haven't given us that impact assessment. For example, ma'am mentioned anticipated costs, and not actually mentioning what those anticipated costs are. We need to know what those anticipated costs are. That's part of the information we needed to be provided with. So my suggestion, DPME needs to come back, give us the full report, and then present on that report. They can't just give us a gloss over like they've done.
Can we follow that line? It means you'll have to come back and give us your report. That's what the suggestion is. I don't know, members, your hands were up. Tell us.
Thank you, Chair. I'm not sure whether the TPME cannot, as we speak, present their own, because when I listened to the Honourable Lady that was presenting, she said, we had ours.
Yeah.
We then sat down together. We then exchanged information. And this is the product we came up with. So if that is the case, they can then take us back from what they presented earlier on. That made them to come with this kind of a program. After having meetings with the Department of Communication, so that they, I don't think they should go back. So I really would be very worried if we send them back, because consistently we are alleged to be the one that are delaying this process at this period in particular. Everybody now is pointing fingers at us, sometimes opportunistically teaching. sometimes very opportunistically. However, let's make sure that we do our part.
No, it's fine.
Let them.
Do you have that assessment as we sit here?
Okay, thank you, Chair. There was a narrative product of the CS that details all the information. So from our side, it was not more of just coming to present the analysis without intervening. So our approach is that you intervene at the point where you find a gap. You know, you don't hold it. Hence, at the end of the day, we issued a sign-off that says we have quality assured the work and therefore we are signing it off. So it's not about, coming and reflect, this is what, these are the weakness of the bill without intervening at the point of identification. So it's been a very to and fro. We were very kind of harsh to the department. At time, we were even there to help where they could not actually clarify what the problem and the root cause. And we'll engage, go step by step. So we're intervening at the point where, there were gaps, so that we don't come and say, DOC, these are the gaps. But yes, we were working with them and we just, coming from Pretoria and come and point fingers at them. So it was to say, correct as we find, issues that are emerging. And it's been a very, lengthy exercise. Hence, it took us from October up to when we signed off by second week of December.
Thank you. Okay. Can I give you this?
Thank you, Chairperson. My observation is that, in a sense, this takes care of most of the issues that are in the CS report. Written out differently, with the comments from the department, with comments from people or bodies that have been consulted, but maybe what should have happened was that this should have been attached to the presentation as well for ease of reading. I'm not sure whether that can be done. But if you look at what is in here, a lot of it emanates from the assessment itself. Because it does give you an indication of the problems identified, the root causes of those problems, why the problem persists, or the effect of the problem, but also goes on to say who has been consulted in the process of the work of both the DPME and the department. So in a sense, this is all condensed into, this is all condensed into this. But maybe then a separate report for ease of comfort should have been issued to as part of the package, yeah. But truly speaking, it is all covered here. Maybe that there are gaps in some of the issues, but by and large, it's covered. Thank you.
Now maybe you can most do this for the sake of clarifying members on the issues that are in that report. You can make that presentation. Because we can't go away and come back. We are here, all of us. The report is there. The report that is integrated in this presentation is there. Maybe let's have it. Let's have that as a presentation. Do we have this? Okay. No. Maybe let's just receive that presentation. When is that present? When was that done? Yes, sir.
Madam Chair and honourable member. Chair, in the last presentation, remember we had attached the report, and honourable said we need a presentation on CS.
Yes.
Yes, and that's how the presentation, 1 hour of Andam was on leave that day. She said we needed a presentation on CS. That's how the presentation came about. And as the minister is saying, the colleague from DPME was giving the DPME overall view around the CS. And from my side, I was thinking that what they are asking her to do is to move outside of the framework with CS check, that you have a template that you have to respond to before you do the final one, and as she was saying, we're working together with the FPB. Mm-hmm. And if you check the report, the CS report, at the end, there's a spreadsheet that deals with the cost that issues were raised around. The report that we gave to the portfolio committee previously. So I suspect that when she comes back, she's going to repeat the same presentation. So the issue is that, as she correctly says, every time there were issues where we did not agree, together with the FPB, we responded here.
No, we understand that. But what I'm saying, this report was never presented to the committee. And is it possible to present that report so that we yes, let's find out. No.
Chair, I don't think that actual report has ever been given to us. And why not? That's an important question. Why have we not been given the full report? I'd like to read the report and study it before I make my form an opinion on it. I don't think it can be presented to me now. I want to read it in detail and then ask questions once I've read it and internalized it. It's actually problematic that they haven't provided us with the full report. Why is that?
Okay. Honorable Kalak.
No, Chair, I think that there might be a confusion amongst us. This report, that document, indeed was distributed.
Let me see this.
And if we look at the minutes of 7 March, I think maybe Tim Goose should circulate those minutes so that as members we can see that was actually distributed.
Second December. This is the December report.
This one, but it was sent in November.
No, this was developed and finalized on the second.
Yes, the finalized one, which didn't get this one.
My question is, from DPME, can you make a presentation of this report? She says we must have that report before a presentation. We can't be given a presentation here. That's what Honorable Van Damme is saying. Meaning, we'll have to circulate the December report, not the November report. This is the final report of December, which is integrated here. So we'll have to get that report circulated. But and then when we come back, at least we shall have gone through that report and make a proper contribution. That's what Honorable Van Damme is saying. Agreed? So that we can now go back to the parliamentary legal unit on the basis of all this presentation and all of that, so that we can hear from their side, but come back next week to get that presentation, which was not circulated to us. What was circulated was November, isn't it? The final product was never circulated to us. Can we now get the Mamu Ngema? You are not Mangena, you are Ngema. Get that, and then we can. And then what will be the status of the department's presentation in that case? Because a DOC report after the DPME will have to be presented then members, what are we going to do? Because that report was a joint operation with this one of TPME. It's a product of a joint operation. Honorable Tolas, before we go
to the I understand here we just discussed process. My conclusion here is that there's not going to be differences. As the official was explaining to say, this has been a joint effort. And if that is the case, it's fine if members feel like we must get that, the last, very last report from DPME, is fine. But I trust them that this that they have just presented is in fact going to be the last and what we would want to see. There's not going to be any changes. But our worry is that the process was a little bit problematic of having to conclude before having presented to us so that if we are able to punch holes. I trust that this is going to be a final product. So let's not, we might be anxious, but let's trust that this process is going to be as what we wanted to see. If we can allow the parliamentary advisor just to present and allow the process, I trust that we'll come to the same conclusion as they have. Because we gave them instruction after having engaged with them, and they are giving us a conclusion on the work that they've been doing. So let us get that report together here. Let's get the report where they concluded, and then what would be the joint is what they have just presented. I'm not sure if I'm clear. I trust that it's going to come to the same conclusion.
Honorable Fundy.
Chair, I just wanted to say that there was, we didn't really, as you know, discuss the impact study, and there was issues on that I put in a lot of written questions specifically. So I think it's not to say that we can just trust that we will agree. We need to, as a committee, sit with it before we can come to that conclusion.
We agree that DPME next week will present the report. We agree. And then now, my question was, if the DPME and the department work together and then the product is this, do we need to listen to the DOC? You say we must listen to the DOC.
No, Chair, I don't think we should. Let them be part of the meeting just for confirmation.
Right.
Because it will be the same product.
Do we agree? Because they're working together anyway. Yes.
Chair, I seem to disagree.
Yes.
The department we have outside the impact, the CS report, we have been engaging the department on very serious issues raised by stakeholders. And our legal person here in Parliament have raised issues legally and constitutionally in relation to the bill. And we have said they must go back more than 3 times. To me, the CS report, it doesn't, because all we wanted to get from the DMB, what will be the social, economic impact of this bill? Which to me, legally, we can deal with the bill, but let's be given and be, it doesn't even need, to me, the department to be part of that meeting when we meet the DME, because we must engage them with if we differ. We don't need the department to come and collaborate. And the department must deal with these issues which we said they must go back and which were raised by stakeholders. So to me, Chair, I think we can continue, can get the from the state law advisor and get from them what they have done and engage them if we are not satisfied.
Except that this is a parliamentary legal unit, not state law. let's have a presentation from the parliamentary legal services.
Good morning.
I'm okay today.
And then after this, you get ready to present. And then we're left with next week, yourselves, GPME.
Greetings to all the members. The name is Phumelele Lengema, Parliamentary Legal Advisor. Thank you, Chairperson, for the opportunity. I trust that my view or input only has to be on the issue on the impact assessment that just has been discussed and presented to the committee. Chairperson, in my submission, I would basically indicate that the engagements that have happened between the departments, the one that was assisting with the impact assessment and the communication department working on the bill that is before the committee, that is basically the engagements that, as per the instruction and direction of the committee, was requested. And from what they have presented and perhaps from the approach, there might be challenges there and there in respect of clarities. But in my submission, I do appreciate and perhaps make a point that what they have done would probably, once all the information and the details is requested are before the committee, would cover all the concerns or the issues that perhaps are already covered, but the detail is in the full report. Because the impact assessment, as the word says it, it's actually an assessment that is not yet, one can say, it will be so or it has occurred. But it is some estimations or possibilities that the departments, from where they stand and from the approaches that they follow in doing this exercise, we basically look at. Now, looking at what the department has prepared also from the instructions of the committee in relation to the bill itself, I doubt that the correlation requires that the other process be stopped because of the other. Because the work that has been done is the work that looks into everything else that has happened, and it takes into account the deliberations that the committee has conveyed to the support staff and the department. It also takes into consideration what the public had to say in influencing the end result of the outcome of this process. So in all honesty and in my submission, I would rather, Chairperson, err on the side of caution, and for the fact that the meeting has already been set and all parties are here ready to go ahead, that the presentation on the amendments and the proposal that the department wants to place before the committee be heard and taken thereof. And then the impact assessment full report can then, which I suppose could be of huge assistance, in fact, with the proposals and whatever the details that are lacking would be once the final impact assessment report is before the committee, they have studied it and they have seen it for themselves. And that would be of huge assistance, because all the documents and all the work which would lead us towards the final position would be before the committee. So my suggestion in a short sentence, Chairperson, is that we allow, with the permission of the committee, of course, the department to bring forth the proposals that we have worked on. Thank you, Chair. Just one final point. Our offices was not part of the impact assessment and all the processes that took place, but we are basically working on the bill and the instructions of the committee just in relation to the bill. But we can also look at the report itself on the impact assessment. Thank you, Chair.
We now allow the department to make a presentation. And maybe check why that's a December report Why didn't we have this report until May? just no, I really need an answer on that one. Why the DG is busy? I'm not asking the minister this, I'm asking the administration. Why didn't we get the report from DPME? Because it's we have been working with them. It was sent to the sector of the committee.
Yes.
On the
2nd of March.
So Ichalale late, in other words. The problem is with us as the committee. It was sent to the committee secretary on the 2nd of March, and we never received it. Yeah, the December report. What do you want to say?
It was sent,
the report was sent in March to us.
Yeah, no, it was sent, and I think when they were trying to do some format for the committee, it could not work. We had to send the web format of the same report. So in terms of the dates, we finalized it on that date, and there's a sign of that date that they did in terms of the CS that we had finalized. So all the documents for the last meeting, they were part of that target that was set.
Which we never received.
It was received because they said the web document is giving them problems to print. Please send us the web copy. The PDF was giving problems. Please send us the web copy of the same CS report.
No, it's all right, because we don't have the report. It's not going to help us. This explanation. We must get explanation from the committee secretary, not necessarily from you. You will sort it out with the committee secretary. But what you need to do now is to get the report from the department. TOC? Or you want the minister to say go ahead? The minister already said to the gentleman there must present the report. There is a presentation, we have it. Go ahead, Chief.
Thank you, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members. Thank you, Minister.
Just hold there, Fandam.
Yeah, I was just going to mention that with that presentation that we received in December, whenever, we didn't have an opportunity to go through those input clause by clause. So we as a committee didn't really have from our side the opportunity to give input on the impact assessment.
Go ahead, Chair. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair, and honorable members. Thank you, Minister and DG. Chair, as per instruction, the instruction of the committee and also the direction on the concerns that were raised regarding some of the provisions of the bill, to address them, we met last week, Chair, on the 11th of May. The department met with the state law advisor together with Mrs. Singham, as she indicated that we worked on it. And then on the last meeting, the committee resolved that in the next meeting, on the 7th of March, the committee resolved that in the second meeting, which is today, we're going to start from clause F on the bill. I'll start from clause F on the bill. 18F. In the slides, it starts from page 5. I'll refer to the documents which are attached, the Chairperson and honorable members. There's a discussion document, which is the main document in which it illustrates the comments, the amendments marked Annex C written the discussion document. This is the main document that I'll be referring to. I will also refer to the original bill, which is also attached. That is page 5, please. Yeah, that is the slide. That is the presentation. Yeah, page 5 of the presentation and page 39 of the discussion bill. In other words, that's page 39 of the bill and also page 5 of the presentation. Not that one. The discussion one. Yes, this one. That is page 39 here, and in the presentation, it will be from page 5. Yeah.
Do you have the bill? Do we have the documents apart from the presentation? Do we have the bill? Do we have the bill? Honorable members, can we break for 5 minutes? Just 5 minutes left,
Thank you. Thank you.
Can we settle down? We are ready, Nkala.
Thank you, Chair and Honorable Members. That is page 5 of the slide. Chair, Section 18F is appearing in the slides. It creates a new offence in respect of revenge porn. In other words, Chair and Honorable Member, there is no provision regulating the distribution of pornography where the person who is depicted in the image has not consented to distribution. In other words, Section 18F intends to create a new offense of revenge porn. This is very prevalent because nowadays we see that pornography is distributed on social media without the consent of the other person. In other words, Section 18F is aimed at protecting the public and the person who is depicted on pornography. This provision, as I said, it will protect the victims of revenge porn. That is Section 18F. The subsection 2 states that a person who discloses such content for the purpose of assisting or preventing or investigating crime will not be guilty of a crime. That will be where the pornographic material is furnished to the police officer and the request of such material is part of the evidence. In other words, The section 1 that I indicated earlier, it creates an offense if you distribute this pornography without the consent of the owner. But the subsection 2, which I mentioned now, it says if on the request of the South African, the police officer, you have to disclose that, it will not be an offense. The aim of Section 18F is to create an offense for distribution of child pornography. In other words, this section also takes into account the fact that when you are two, both parties, and there is a pornography that is taken, it is possible that you can give consent to the creation, but not the distribution. So in other words, if you distribute that without the consent, it will be an offense. Page 6. Yeah, it's a continuation. I said this section has been revised to ensure that the consent of the person depicted in the film or photograph at the time of the creation therefore cannot be used as a defense, as I indicated earlier, that you can't say that you gave consent, you gave permission when we created this pornography, but you distributed it. The moment you distribute it, Chair and Honorable Member, it becomes an offense. The victims of revenge pornography that are posted on social media will have recourse from Section 18F. Section 18F, it says it's an offense. The penal provision, the sentencing provision, is in Section 24, which I will state it briefly. In other words, the shortest part of it is that Section 18F, it creates an offense where one distributes pornographic material. It is also an offense, Chair, where you both create an you both create pornography, you record it, that is a creation, and then the other party distribute it without consent. That will be an offense, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members. That is Section 18F. I would like to proceed to Section 18G.
Can we engage while he's presenting? Because I personally would like to know if it's an offence, who's going to deal with it? Is that the police or FNB?
It's a very short presentation. We can do that.
Okay.
Honorable Van Dijk, do you want to? You said you want to engage as it proceeds.
Yes, no, but I take your advice. We can ask afterwards. I was just worried.
I said you can engage whilst. Because it's a very short presentation. And it helps so that we can do it. We can deal with things.
So who's going to deal with it then?
Yes. What is your question? What is your clarity, Honorable Funding?
Yeah, I want to know. He says it's a criminal offense, or it's an offense. But who's going to deal with it? Is it going to be the South African police, or is it going to be even of FBB?
Are you listening, Chief?
I'm listening, Chief.
Did you get the question?
Yes, sir. Yes, Chair. Yes, Chair.
I've already ruled that we engage as you said it. Because it will help. It will help the meeting, but also help clarity on the question. Can you respond to that?
Yeah. Definitely this matter is the authority it has with the South African Police Service will investigate the matter. Yeah. If
I think this is the revenge porn section is probably one of the only, I think there's two more sections in the bill that I agree with. I think revenge porn has to be legislated, and it needs to be dealt with by SAPS, not the FPB, but there needs to be a legal definition of what constitutes revenge porn. Just for clarity's sake, page 6, point 1, it will also be an offence even when the person who appears in the pornography consented to the original creation. So who is it an offence with? The person who distributes or the person who consents to being...
Who distribute?
Only the distributor,
yes.
Not the person who's in it.
Yeah, okay. If you distribute it without the consent, okay. That's when it triggers criminal offence.
Okay.
Yeah, and... slice number.
That's on
seven?
Page 6.
Yeah, page 7
slide
now.
Slice 7.
Yeah. Chair, so, honourable members, there's been a prevalence of distribution of content depicting sexual offences and violence against children. We've noted that from the media. So the aim of this section 18G is to prohibit filming and distribution or distribution of films and photographs depicting sexual assault and violences against children. This section is related to that one, but the first one, it deals generally with a revenge porn. That's when you distribute it. But this one, 18G, it aims at protecting the children. It has been revised to make provision for internet service providers to be compelled to furnish the details of the person who disseminated such content to the South African Police Service for investigation and prosecution. Honorable Member, Honorable Pandam, this also subsection answers your questions that the South African police officer will have, has authority to deal with this matter. And the internet service provider will be required in terms of this section to produce or disclose the information of such person who depicted it on social media. Because now, as we are standing, there is no provision that can compel them to finish the South African police officers with that information. With your permission, Honorable Chair, I'll proceed to 18F. 18H. Chair. 18H. Chair, this section 18H was amended specifically to be in line with section 16.2 of the Constitution. The title of this section was amended from the bill to be in line with section 16.2, as I indicated, to cover up all forms of hatred that are based on identifiable group characteristics, that which may also cause harm to individual. This was just a section that was just revised, you know, just to be in line with section 16.2 of the Constitution, because the section 16.2 of the Constitution, it indicates which speech, amounts to hate, propaganda, and all that. It was just to be in conformity with section 16.2 of the Constitution. Section 18F in page 8. This was just a minor amendment, Honorable Chair. We just removed the word digital because there's a digital game, digital film. It appeared to be a repetitive. It was just removed for that reason. Just a minor revision there. And section 24. In section 24, we used to have the word industry classification body. This word gave an impression that FPB is outsourcing its mandate. So the new word commercial online distributor was inserted simply because there are entities that are regulated by FPB, such as Showmax. It was included in section 24. This section 24 deals with distribution of film or game by a distributor. Again, what we did in section 24, we deleted the word under the age of 18, you know, because it's a general common cause. I mean, it's a common law that everyone who is a minor is on the age of 18. We just deleted it. It's a common cause. Section 24, capital A, it deals with the offenses, the prohibitions, and the penalties on distribution. In other words, the offenses that I indicated earlier relating to revenge porn, relating to distribution of inappropriate material to the children and all that, the offenses for them are indicated in section 24A. Those section 18F, 18G, they say it's an offense. But then the amount of sentence, the amount of penalty that you have to pay, it is illustrated in section 24, capital A. And again, in section 24, capital A, the word newspaper, magazine, or advertisement was deleted and the word publication was inserted because it includes newspaper, magazine, or advertisement. And it goes beyond the newspaper, magazine, because it can also be online. So it was just deleted, that word. With your permission, Chair, I would like to proceed to section 24, capital B. Colleague Plan from DPMA indicated that there were various consultations that we had with stakeholders, amongst other stakeholders, particularly the Department of Justice, who are in a legislative unit, who are busy dealing with the cyber bill and cyber security bill and hate speech bill. They came with a proposal that is here in Section 24B. They suggested this because they are busy with these bills. That one bill is also in Parliament. So they wanted to be a conformity. One of the things that we took them into account, which also partly answers you, Mrs. Honorable Member Van Damme, you raised the issue of child pornography, that there is a definition. You know what we did? Because there were three definitions of pornography. Constitutional Court, Sexual Offences and Related Matters Amendment Act 82 of 2007, and Films and Publication says. So what we agreed with the Department of Justice, particularly the legislative unit, is that there will be a single definition. Films and Publication cannot, FPB cannot regulate, cannot state the definition. If we said here the definition of child pornography will be the definition as stated in Sexual Offences and Related Matters, to have one single uniform legislative definition that addresses all. Same with cyber bill and hate speech bill. In other words, we have one single definition. This is one of the proposals that were raised by them. In 24B, they proposed amendment to the provision to ensure the conformity with the principal legislation in of sexual offences. In other words, if you commit child pornography, as I indicated earlier, the offence that is stipulated, the penal provision for it, it will refer to the Criminal Procedure Act as a primary legislation or primary statute regulating the sentences and all that. So if you commit an offence and it's a criminal offence in terms of FPB or in terms of cyber, or they all refer to Criminal Procedure Act Amendment, Criminal Procedure Act 51 of 1977, as a primary act dealing with the offences, the penalty. To this end, Chair, both definition and sentence in respect of the offence will now be determined, as I indicated, in terms of criminal law legislation. This we find it to be very, very useful in that there will not be inconsistency. The magistrate, the judicial officer, the judges and others, when they are faced with this problem, they will refer to a single definition of child pornography. If it's beyond that, they can also refer to FPB, but the FPB, they cannot refer to FPB for the definition. They can refer to it for some other elements of it that are on social media. With your permission, Chair, I would like to proceed to page 9. Page 9. You'll note that 24B is the one that's the main section dealing with the offences. And 24E1, that is the subsection that deals specifically to the recourse of the revenge porn. Because normally, during the process of legislation, there must be an offence. Subsequent section or at the back, it will be a specific provision for that section. So basically here, this is the section here that ensure that there is a recourse for complainants as there is no comprehensive legislation. This section, again, Chair, was further revised to ensure that the consent of the person depicted in the film or photograph, a film photograph at the time of creating, cannot be used as a defense. Furthermore, the provision of what constitutes private has been revised to be in line with the inputs received. I'd like to proceed to Section 27, Capital A. The mischief in this Section A is that there was no provision. This is very prevalent in the society. There was no provision requiring the service provider to provide a service in provider, provide an information of a person who disseminated any information. In other words, if someone, as I indicated earlier, has posted something on a hate speech, something about child pornography or what, there is no provision at current saying that you as a service provider disclose to the person who is affected. In other words, you don't have remedy. There is no provision compelling them to give you an information about the details of the person who posted. So this section was expanded to include all other forms of prohibited content which internet service providers are obliged to report. It also creates obligation on them. They need to report that. They also need to disclose if you request a certain information on them. In other words, it will be unlawful for them to keep such inappropriate or dangerous or harmful material to the children whilst they are aware of that material. So they have obligation to report this material. When it is reported, the South African police officer will request information of such or the identity of the person. With your permission, Chair, I will proceed to Section 31, Capital A. This was just a minor alteration or minor amendment, because what we noted during consultation is that the emphasis was placed by various stakeholders. They said, you know, there should be a publication by the minister pursuant to the Act. They, you know, it should be subject to the public participation. In other words, in Section 31A, we have indicated that anything that is done in pursuance of this legislation, there should be public consultation, as it is public consultation. This, in fact, I would say the committee has already observed previously when the committee instructed and gave direction that we should consult various stakeholders who are affected by this bill. So now it's legislated. So, Section 24 in page 10, I already stated it, this amendment, Chair. That is Section 24B. It's just a repetition. I stated it there. And in conclusion, Chair, we believe that the provisions that alleged or were merely alleged to be unconstitutional were removed, and parliamentary legal advisor, as state law advisor in the department, we have reviewed that this document addresses the concerns that we raise as regard to, as far as legislative loopholes were concerned, and then we'd like to thank you for this opportunity.
That's the presentation, members. You want to engage? On which one now?
On the
remember you said we must get clarity as we go. Okay.
I just went on the hate speech that you mentioned. There is hate speech legislation.
That page? Or
page.
So slide what?
It's 7.
Slide 7.
Yeah. I just want to, with regard to the hate speech, the legislation around that, will that deal with it, or will it...
Flat 7 number? There is section 18H.
Yeah. And I just want to ask how the, if we will deal with hate speech. And then I also need just to know from you, were these, were this impact study, was that published? And we
can you deal with that? Can you respond to that?
Sure, I'm responding. Honorable Sheen? We have Section 16(2) of the Constitution. As I indicated earlier, that we have amended these sections to be in line with hate speech that are covered in terms of the Constitution. As a primary legislation, as a supreme law, it has to be. If you read Section 16, subsection 2, it says, it speaks of the propaganda of war, incitement of imminent violence, advocacy of hatred that is based on race, ethnicity, gender, or religion, and that constitute incitement to cause harm. So basically, the provision was amended specifically to be in line with Section 16(2) of the Constitution. In other words, if there is a complaint reported on hate speech, the South African police officer will be requiring the identification of the person, will be requiring the service provider, internal service provider, to provide the details, so that he can effectively investigate this hate speech. My colleague from DPME clearly stipulated that there are no effective enforcement, law enforcement mechanism. There are no recourses. So this section was done specifically so that there can be a recourse. not only the recourse only to the victim of revenge porn, victim of hate speech or what, but also the recourse in terms of law enforcement. That's why we have to come in collaboration with the Department of Justice, the legislative unit dealing with hate speech and cybercrime. They've seen our bill. They've said our bill is in order. They said as long as they gave us amendments that we made a cross-reference to the criminal section. So it was done so solely for that section so that there could be a recourse to the parties who are or anyone, victims affected thereof. Thank you. Yes, definitely. If it's reported to SAPS, they also have jurisdiction on it.
Okay, and the draft bill, where was it published?
Yeah,
the final assessment. The final assessment of the impact study. Does the legislation not say that it must be published?
You mean the legislation is as yes.
Excuse me, Chair, I'd like to assist. As far as the CS report is concerned, it's not incorporated with reference to the bill itself. So the CS process is separate. That was done. We can request the department to confirm whether that has been published, but we are then ongoing with the process of the amendment bill, and what we have presented now are the proposed amendments to the amendment bill subsequent to the engagements with the committee itself, as well as the advice of the committee that we liaise and engage and consult further with stakeholders. So what we've presented now are proposed amendments over and above the bill in its initial form.
I think to add further,
are you okay?
Yes, Chair, is that not just that normally the impact study is done before the bill is took on? That's the thing that's causing a bit of confusion.
Thank you, Chair. Honourable Member, it is a requirement that when departments gazette their bills for public comment, they should also publicize the CS. So what happened in 2015, when CS was introduced in February, there were also institutional arrangements around its implementation, and the cabinet also came with an official date of implementation of 1st of October. So by that time, the bill was already tabled in Parliament, and hence 2015. Yes, and I think it was tabled in August, if I'm not mistaken. Hence, yeah, there was this process that was left out. Thanks, Chair.
Yeah, no, I understand. It was some time ago last year when this was explained. Maybe we have forgotten, but it's fine. That's what it means. Honourable Fanda?
Thanks, Chair. I think I must upfront say that I think the process that's happened with this bill should be a cautionary tale for other departments and other entities. A bill was tabled in Parliament which wasn't properly consulted, it wasn't properly written, CS hadn't been conducted. You say that the CS requirement was 1 October 2015. This bill was tabled in Parliament August 2016. Wasn't it? 2015. No, it was tabled last year. But anyway, that's besides the point. But I think it's a lesson going forward that don't table bills in Parliament that haven't been properly, done. And I think as a committee, we shouldn't blame ourselves for the delay that's happened with this bill. I think we've been thorough. We wanted to make sure that we pass a bill as Parliament that does not have unconstitutional provisions, has been properly consulted. So I think we have done our work on our side, and you guys should take the blame, actually, for tabling a bill that was problematic in Parliament. It should have never been tabled in the form that it was. That being said, judging from the presentation, it appears that you have taken some of the concerns on board. I would still like to see the final version of the bill on paper so that I can read it properly and read it holistically with the rest of the bill. But from this, as a superficial assessment, it seems that you have listened to some of the concerns. I still have a couple of concerns, for example, such as compelling internet providers to provide information. Like, I would like to see that written out what it looks like specifically, because that such a provision could be open to abuse. So it has to be very, very carefully drafted. So I'd like to see that. That's why I'd like to see the final form of the bill. And then another concern I have, Chair, is that it says here that, where is it now? On slide 4, that there's been new amendments to the bill included, which means that this bill now is fundamentally different from the one that was tabled originally. And I don't know what the rules of Parliament say, but as far as I remember, I think it's rule 286-4C, is that, yes, if now the bill is different from the one that was tabled, we need to apply, we need to write to the National Assembly to ask for, what's the correct wording, extending the subject of the bill. So in essence, because now the bill is different, we now have to, I don't know what the process is, and the parliamentary legal advisor would have to advise, but I think we are required by the rules of Parliament to go back to the National Assembly and ask for it to be the subject matter of the bill to be extended, or for the department to take this back and table a new bill in Parliament to include the new amendments. Thank you, Chair.
Minister?
Chairperson, I just wanted to come in where Honourable Van Damme was not putting the date in place, and her saying that it's besides the point. It actually is a point, because if we have the dates wrong and we say this public, it becomes a problem. And I can see that you are quite agitated at probably feeling that you might be accused of having stalled the process. We're quite fine with the fact that we have to bring this back to you. You have to advise on areas that you're not comfortable with. We have to go back again. At no point are you being accused of having stalled the process by us. And therefore, it is not warranted. Your statement is not warranted that the date issue is besides the point, and you shouldn't be held accountable for a delay in the tabling of the bill. So, just to put you at ease, nobody has accused you, but the dates are very, very important. So that, because this becomes public record, it will never be correct that if we're not in sync with the dates, because it will appear as though we have done something extraordinary wrong, and that's not the case.
Thank you, Chair. My mind is just to, I think that the department have at least taken our considerations on many issues which were raised at the committee. They addressed them. I think what is left now is for us as a committee to go through the bill as we have started and stopped at close 18 then. On the issue of what must we do now with the bill, since it has changed drastically, I think our legal advisor for Parliament will actually advise us on that. I will want also to get that opinion, because I think she mentioned it in one deliberation, in one committee meeting when we were discussing the bill. She did allude to that fact, that there might be that problem coming. So I'll be interested if she can actually advise us on that, so that we follow a correct process.
Another, so that we don't make closing remarks while still proceeding, we can do our closing remarks at the end. Did you wanted to say something after the minister? Honourable Funder.
To clarify the dates issue, so it is reflected accurately on record, the bill was tabled in November 2015, and then we only dealt with it in the beginning of 2016. So, in fact, the requirement was The SIAS requirement was in October 2015, and this was tabled in November 2015. So even if it is still a month, because that was already an existing policy requirement, a legislative requirement, that should have been taken on board before the bill was tabled in Parliament. But I apologize for saying it was tabled in 2016. It was tabled in November 2015, when that SIAS requirement was already in.
All right. MPB, you wanted to say something? The lady next to you.
Thank you, Chair. I would like to just allay the fears of the Honourable Member with respect to compelling internet service providers to disclose, whilst you will be given the opportunity to see the revisions. But we just wanted to highlight that will be part of a law enforcement process. So it would never be an arbitrary decision or requirement that is levied or leveled by a particular individual. It is with respect to where there is a criminal process or an investigation process driven by theft, that the internet service provider would be compelled to furnish such information, and once again that information would be furnished to the SAPS directly and not necessarily to the FPB. But as I said, you will be given an opportunity, but it's always part of a law enforcement process.
All right. Before we come to the to Parliament legal advice, from 18F to the end, members, are we okay? Because the judgment takes us from where we ended up to now. This judgment, do we have anything else on this judgment? Before we other issues are clarified by Parliament. Agreed, Mrs. Ngema?
Thanks again, Chairperson, for the opportunity. Let me perhaps start from where we at with the process. What the department has taken the committee through is, in all respect, basically the responses to what the public hearings gave us and what the members, as we were engaging, were presenting. And the corrections or the discussion document that was presented up to its end today is basically in response to that and takes forward suggestions that when the committee deliberates on this bill, those are the considerations that they need to take into account. That is the first one. The second one is in relation to the permission from the National Assembly, in terms of National Assembly Rule 286.3c. Reading that provision, we can see that it is mandatory and compulsory that because this bill is an amendment to an existing legislation, therefore that permission must be sought from the National Assembly. I've quickly, after our discussions with the department, looked at the provisions and looking at the document that was just presented now in its finality. There are about four or five provisions that were not part of the introduced bill, but they are necessary. And hence, we have Rule 286.3c to enable instances like that when they happen, that once a matter has been referred to the committee and there is a need that you go beyond what has been before you, but especially in this instance, it's in relation to an existing legislation and an amendment that was proposed. So for those four or five provisions, in order for the committee to be able to present a report that speaks to them when they report back to the National Assembly, the permission must be sought. And the process of doing that is basically for the committee to take a resolution and a report on that they agree that they've deliberated on certain provisions and they are still considering them, but they require that the House grants them the permission to deliberate on them and make a finding on them. Now that process, once the committee has given us the instruction, that is the process we, the support staff of Parliament, prepares and then must bring back the report for adoption with that request, and then it will be tabled through the processes of ATCing such requests back to the House. And then once the permission is granted, then all processes may go. It is a parallel process that can run along with the deliberations and everything else, because basically it is technical in nature. And in the instances that I know and I've been involved in, there has never been a time where the House has refused such permission. So it is a process that must be done, and it is the process that the committee must give an instruction and a resolution that we engage in, and we bring it back to the committee for adoption, and then the processes will move ahead. So that's basically where we at now with the process. And then the committee moving forward will then indicate how we go about now on the deliberations as the committee on the close by close bill and whatever the department and the public has provided. Thank you, Chair. I'm trusting that makes sense.
It has there. Okay. I think we are fine. We are fine. We may then stop it there. On this one. I think we need to engage on those processes so that we can finalize it as soon as possible. Okay. I think we're done with the first item. We're done with the first item. We'll now deal with the last item. Members, when I started the meeting, I raised the issue of starting the process of filling vacancies of a permanent board in the SABC. That one is a process, it doesn't need discussion. By the end of the week, the advert will be out. You are free to apply. You are free to apply, and then you may resign after that. It goes beyond 2019, by the way. Maybe you'll be securing your position. But I think the critical one, members, is this one of MDA and ICASA that I want to table. Members will recall that we sent out an advert in December 2016. Maybe quickly, we just need to contact an advisor to tell us, or just to give me what are the vacancies, or where are we now with the CASA. I know that two people, their term came to an end this month. So we have two vacancies over and above the two that we advertised in December. In the media, the MDA, as we speak, they may not correct. So we advertised for four vacancies last year in December, and the timing of the adverts were very bad, because it was towards the end of the year, around the 15th or something of December. Around the 18th, I think that was a mistake, because on the 18th other people are on holiday already and all of those things. So it was a problem. But the problem goes beyond that, that people did apply. You don't have the service yourselves. I have them. People did apply, and by the end of January, we had about close to 30 on ICASA and around 26 on MDDA, which was a good response looking at the time. But when I looked together with the secretary, when I looked at the address, one, were very thin on women, very, very thin. Can I have the percentages? We're very thin on women, and we only have black people. But it's better than DOC minister. When you advertise for the DC, only one person applied. So it was only blacks who applied. Blacks meaning the Africans, colored and Indians. There is no white. And the percentage of the people who applied in terms of that category on MDDA, why is it not returning? On MDDA, it's 75% is black. No, it's Africans. And then the 21% is colored, and 4% is Indians. Zero white. It's a problem, in my view. In terms of gender, still on MDDA, in terms of gender, we have 61% males, 39% females. So that's the problem. On ICASA, we have, in terms of gender, we have 70% males and 30% females. In terms of race, we have 77% Africans, 17% colored, 6% Indian. The reason why I bring it to the committee, it's against the laws of this country to have such a kind of percentages. And I thought it will be wise to present it to the members to take a decision. My view will be that maybe we should have done this much earlier. To say if the situation is like that, re-advertise the thing, so that we can allow a number of people. Skills wise, all of them are okay. Skills wise, it's okay that those blacks, but it's the problem of gender and color, if you like. And therefore, if you want to re-advertise, you need to have that reason, which is, in my view, legal. And I wanted to raise that with the committee, because we can't just run from the office of the chair. We can't just run with it, because it will become the office of the chair thing. So I wanted to present it to you members so that you can air your views on it. Honorable Van Damme and
So, before we begin the discussions, what are the numbers of people who have applied for each position?
From this numbers we have, what we've done is to reflect them from the civic what they have, and then the number. This is MD date. MD date is 26. I choose not
to add the late submissions because they are late.
Yeah.
But there are about two people. There are two people who submitted late. This is MD day, and then ICASA. We have 29 people who applied, and we have one late application. But still, all of them are blacks. Yes. The advisor, because that's what I've seen, this Fandam will apply in ICASA and then again in MCT. So it's more or less same people. Honorable Kalako.
Now, Chair, I was going to say, in U.S. also adding this point which you are mentioning now, that other people have applied, you know, both. And in view of the reasons you are putting, I would want to request the I know we know the pressure on the department on this issue. I would want us to request at least the minister to sympathize with us. We re-advertise for a short period so that it's open, especially in addressing the cohesion of our society. That is very much important. We have tried to do that in other appointments. So to me, I think let's allow that, especially around gender and the race question.
Okay, but bear in mind also that there will be cost, additional cost involved.
Yes.
So that's why we need to be very sober when we deal with it. I'm not saying you are done, but
Honorable Dolash and then Fanda.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, I'll concur with what Honorable Kalako is suggesting. I think let's note the fact that the environment at that time was not so conducive. No one, unfortunately, Minister, wanted to come to entities because there was a particular perception then, which I think the work that we have been able to do have changed drastically that perception. Also the timing when we really put the advert, they are quite problematic for me. Especially now for the issue, because I see the interim board of SAPC, I see those women, be very capable women, unfortunately. So we can't, after having noticed the kind of work and the diligence of that board and the women in there, we can't undermine the fact that we need women. When things need to be done, we need women. When things need to be discussed and said in nice English, you need other group of the society. The other group of the society. But when things need to be done, you specifically need women. I'm not saying anything bad about anybody. So I really want to emphasize that point. Because we are against the Constitution if we pursue that. Of course, let's note upfront the fact that there will be financial implications, therefore fruitless expenditure, that we must upfront apologize on it and commit that's not going to happen. But commit to say the short time that Honorable Kalako is suggesting should be very kind of tight, short time, because I know for a fact that already there is one entity that's experiencing some problems so far as the quality is concerned. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Chair. I think with MDDA, because the board's not court, it's a matter of urgency. So if I don't know how long the process will take with re-advertising, waiting for people to submit, that might take a long time. So I would suggest with MDDA specifically,
we look at the CVs, and if there's quality people, if there's not enough quality people, then we re-advertised. With ICASA, I don't think it's too urgent. Is it how many vacancies are there? Because I remember we interviewed four. So we interviewed last year for two. So we just need to fill the other two. Yes.
Or the COSHA.
Yes.
And the other.
So where is that in the process?
Okay.
We still need to approve.
Okay. I think let's give me this one.
Finish it. You are concurring with members to say it's a 1 month thing. You just advertise, close it in a month, and then after that you interview. I think let's if we agree we do that. Let's give it a month. Let's give it a month so that we can advertise.
I'm just really worried about the board being in courts, and because they're in courts, they can't really take decisions. Because we'll advertise for a month, and then we must interview, then we must table a report in the House, and go to the minister. That's another month, so it's going to be about 2 months,
it's
I think.
Yeah.
So I don't know how the minister feels, for example, about the board being in court for 2 months.
I think in principle, the committee is taking a decision that says re-advertise. For both MDDA and ICASA. And then the you know, whatever we need to do, we link up and deal with the administration ourselves. Is that agreed? Okay. But we need to fast track it, members. Minister?
Can I just also come back to you, Chairperson, on urgent decisions that need to be made at a board level? I just need to go back to the MDDA and check on all of those things, and then come back to you probably tomorrow to say that the decision that we're taking now is helpful or is not helpful. Because some decisions really might not need the board, but might just be operational decisions that the acting CEO could take. So I'll be able to get back to you on that. The one issue that was raised as well was on the interviews for the CEO. Now, that decision was taken and a quorum was formed at that decision. The board was correct at that time. Now, when you are going to do interviews, you don't need the full board to do those interviews. So we'll start the process of interviews for the CEO, and the decision can be taken, I mean, on the basis of what comes out of the interview process. But that really does not need the board, because the decision to even advertise and all of that was taken when the board was called.
Okay. Are we together, members? I think we're fine. Other administrative issues, we'll deal with them. That's it. Any other thing that we need to process?
We're done with the address. We're done with the
address. Is there any other minutes and all those things, the administration, that usually takes our time and don't do any other things? Nothing. I think we're done. Well done. We it's in time now. It's 5 to 12. The report is not ready, members. That we are tabling in on which date? The 26th. We are supposed to adopt a report for the budget. We are adopting it tomorrow because the report is not ready. If it was ready, we'll do it now. But it's not ready, isn't it? So we'll have to come back for an hour tomorrow just to adopt the report and prepare for the 26th. And our report is on the 26th on Friday. Very bad day. On Friday. Yeah.
Thanks a lot, members.
Yeah.
Anything else?
SABC inquiry implementation plan.
No, we'll come back. I think we're done. We're done, members. Thank you very much. We'll come back for the staff. Minister, the we are very concerned about SABC. We'll put processes in place in terms of the board. And then we'll have to have that board running immediately the 6 months end. Then the new board will have to be in. But thanks. It will require. I'll tell you to get out if you have meetings when I'm sharing.